Morning. Today's daf in Bamesias Samech Zayin. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning Zeichen Nishmas Lupin Gavrila Bashmul. We are starting on Samech Vav Amid Aleph. We're actually Samech Vav Amid Beis. We're at the very top of Samech Vav Amid Beis. We are continuing a discussion of Asmachta. Asmachta comes off the Mishnah, because if you remember the Mishnah back on Samech Amid Beis, so the Mishnah had a discussion about basically using your property as a means of securing a loan, but the property is values far exceeding the actual loan. So as they say in the business, so generally speaking, when you are putting up a property, usually the property is going to exceed the value of the loan. In fact, the only way that the bank is going to lend you is so the value is going to exceed the loan. How much is the value going to exceed the loan? So you speak to the mortgage brokers. I'm not one of them. They'll tell you what kind of loan to value we're looking at. But basically over here, the Mishnah describes such a scenario in which the value of the property is far exceeding the loan, and nevertheless the Mishnah says that such an arrangement would be mutter. And not only that, but the Mishnah told us this Baitus Ben Zunin, so he conducted business that way, where he lent people money, the properties were there to secure the loan, properties exceeded it, and he was able to take the property even though the property exceeded the loan. As we discussed yesterday, but I'll just quickly review, that sounds like ribbis. It sounds like you're lending money, you're getting back more for that. So the basic principle that's said by the Rishonim, and it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch, is that this is not ribbis, it's a penalty. In other words, keep in mind that the borrower can always pay back the money. This is a loan. It doesn't have to result in interest, and the borrower can pay back the money, and the putting up of his property is going to serve as basically a penalty in the event that he fails on the performance of his loan and he doesn't pay back. So one-time penalty is considered different than that of accrued interest over time. That's the way most Rishonim understand it. But to that end, however, as we learned in yesterday's daf, so Rav Nachman did an about face. Rav Nachman says, "Hadamar Rav Nachman." So I want to start again on the bottom of Samach Vav Amid Aleph, and we're going to start from Rav Nachman as he basically did. He did a 180. Originally, Rav Nachman was taking the opinion that there was a full kinyan on the entire property, and even if it was negotiated after the origination of the loan, Rav Nachman used to take a very hard-line position that the lender is allowed to take the entire property, even the amount that exceeded the loan. That was Rav Nachman. But then Hadamar Rav Nachman, and this is a good place for us to start today. So Afilu b'shasman ma'os lo kana v'lo klum. And then Rav Nachman says, sorry. Then Rav Nachman says, but I'm doing a 180, and I really believe now that, and not only do I believe, I'm of the opinion that even if this was agreed to at the time of the origination of the loan, I still think that the lender is not going to be able to collect the property that exceeds the loan value. And I feel like my mom's also kind of a low clump. So Ezra Rav Nachmanim I Atanosilimi Kanvashal Shanim Hare Shili Hare Hu Shalom. So the obvious question that goes against Rav Nachman is the Mishnah, where the Mishnah describes where the property is in fact going to go to the lender, even though the value of the property exceeds the value of the loan. We have what's called a problem for Rav Nachman. So Amar Le'ani Amar Asmachta Kanya Umin Yumi Amar Asmachta Lokanya. So Rav Nachman says, look, in the good old days, I used to say Asmachta was Kona. That was me in the past, which we know that because, in other words, before Rav Nachman was Hadar, so he was taking the position that you are bound by this arrangement, this agreement that you made, even though it certainly is an exaggeration, certainly hyperbole. You really are going to give up a property greater than the loan value? But Rav Nachman used to say yes, and he used to subscribe to this idea that Asmachta is Kona. Now, again, he changed his position, but at least Rav Nachman didn't find a difficulty with the Mishnah because he was of the opinion that Asmachta is Kanya. However, I know the Bar Plukta of Rav Nachman on this issue was an Amor by the name of Minyumi. And he was always of the opinion that Asmachta is not Kona. So how did he understand the Mishnah? But the Gemara says, Ula Minyumi Kashi Masisin Ibaisema Masisin Rav Yosihi Ta'am Asmachta Kanya. So even if you are a Minyumi, you can just simply say that the Mishnah is following like the opinion of Rav Yosi. we will learn together in the end of Baba Basra, Yirtzeh Hashem, that that Rav Yossi is of the opinion that's Machta Kanya. I didn't mention this yesterday, but I'll just mention it quickly today. We're reviewing and we're also just learning a little bit of new information. The Gemara at the end of Baba Basra talks about the following scenario. Let's say that I have an outstanding obligation against somebody, and he has a shtar, he has a note. Okay, basically simple lender borrower, and I'm only at the end of the conclusion of the loan, I can only pay back part of the loan. And I say to the lender, look, I'm really sorry, I'm trying. Why don't we do the following? In other words, I know you want the balance. I understand that. Why don't you give the note over to somebody else to hold an escrow, and I will pay you the balance of the note in, let's say, a week from now, or 2 weeks, whatever the term is. A week from now, I'm going to pay you the balance of the note. And if I don't pay you the balance of the note, you can take back your note from the escrow, from the third party, and you can demand the full value of the note from me. Okay? So this is a condition I make. Now again, what does it sound like? Hyperbole, exaggeration, right? Like, I'm just trying. I'm trying to assuage him, but I can't. I don't really commit myself to that. I'm going to pay him again that which I already paid him. So the Gemara over there at the end of Baba Basra says that according to Rav Yossi, you are bound by that commitment, even though it's a smachta, even though you didn't really mean it. So that is where we see that Rav Yossi holds that a smachta is kona. So our Mishnah could be subscribing to Rav Yossi's position. That's one possibility. And we're on the top now of Samachvav and Beisi by Zemud Amalei Kinimi Achshav. Or maybe no. Maybe the way to understand the Mishnah is that it's not a foreclosure. It's not that he's assuming ownership of the property at the end of the loan, and even though the property amount far exceeds the loan amount. No. Really what's happening over here is that it's a sale. In other words, the lender is not lending the money, he's really buying the property. It just happens to be that it's contingent on a condition. I'm going to give you the money for the sale of the property. We'll see 3 years from now. If you don't give me back the money, so then I get to keep the property. But keep the property retroactive to the time where I gave you the money from the very beginning, circa 3 years ago. So that is how to view it. It's not a loan, but rather it's a sale. And if it's a sale, so then no problem of asmachta, no problem of ribis, no problem, nothing. What about
huh? No problem.
The fact that he underpaid for a property, you can underpay for a property. That's fine. The seller wants to sell you the property at a discounted rate. Ain't no nabakar kos. We do say. So it's a sale. It's not a loan. And the Gemara says, and that's how we can understand the Mishnah. And then, as Rashi pointed out at the end, and this is the last thing I mentioned yesterday, Rashi pointed out, as far as the parents are concerned, over the duration of this sale/loan, however you want to describe it, so either the parents can be consumed by the buyer, because we subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda, which is it's tarech abribis is mutter, or we could say like the chachamim, and that is the parents are going to be held in escrow. Anyway, this is where we got up to yesterday. Let's continue. Now, the following was quoted by the yeshiva of Nardai in the name of Rav Nachman. Now, remember, we have just learned together that according to Rav Nachman, so asmachta lo kanya, meaning, unlike his original position where he held that asmachta was kona, but Rav Nachman did a 180. So, right now, we are subscribing to the viewpoint that Rav Nachman holds that a smachta does not create a kinyan. And with that, now the following is going to be difficult, as we have the following halacha quoted in the name of Rav Nachman. Hai asmachta bizmane kanya below zmane lo kanya. So if you have an asmachta, so if it's bizmane, now bizmane right now, we think it means right now, is at the default of the loan. Meaning the loan is due, there was a foreclosure, and even though the property far exceeded the value of the loan, so nevertheless, Rav Nachman's court is saying, yet you're kona. And below is mane lo kanya. Now, if it's before the loan is due, so it's not, there's no kinyan. So the Gemara says, Amar le komidi bezmane kani below zmane lo kani. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Isn't that how it always works? Meaning, if you go over to your lender before the loan is due, and you make some sort of like comment about how your property now is going to be owned by him, why would you say that? Of course, that's the case of asmachta, meaning the loan isn't even due yet. So dilma hachi kamrisum. So the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says it must be that we didn't quote Rav Nachman correctly, and let's correct our understanding of Rav Nachman. Ashkeche begoz mane v'armalei kini kini, busters mane v'armalei kini lo kini. So the Gemara says, maybe if, let's say, the lender finds the borrower and it's begoz mane, it's within the time of the loan, and he says, I want you to acquire my property. So maybe under those circumstances, the property is in fact now going to go over to the lender. However, if it's Buster's money, but if, let's say, if after the loan is due and he says, I want you to acquire my property, so then Lokini, so then he hasn't acquired it. Now, my taima, why should that be? Machmas kisufahu, the kamerlei. So the Gemara says, because the only reason why he's making such an offer to the lender is because he's terribly embarrassed. He really doesn't want to give up his property. That's not really his interest, especially considering that the property is greater than that of the loan value. And the only reason why he's saying that is because he's embarrassed. But the Gemara ends up saying, "Valohi da Philippa goes money nami lo kani." The Gemara says, "No, look, if we have a property that exceeds the value of the loan, anytime the borrower offers it up to the lender, whether it is within the term of the loan, whether it's after the term of the loan, and the Gemara says it is not a commit, it's not a binding agreement. And the fact that I went over to him before the loan is due and I say, here's my property, just leave me alone, it could very well be that, again, once again, it falls under this category of asmachta. It's a non-binding agreement. You only said it because you knew the loan is due and you knew the due date is coming up and you just basically wanted to get him off your back. And so that he doesn't bother you, you make this outlandish, non-binding a declaration that you're going to give up your property in the event that he doesn't get that you can't pay him back. Okay, so once again, the Gemara now is subscribing to, now whether which version Rav Nachman said at this point in time, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, that's not true, but it's the Gemara says that if you have a property that exceeds the value of the loan, so whenever you are offering it up as payment for the loan, so the Gemara says we're going to view it as an asmachta. Amra Papa ha'asmachta zimnen kanya v'zimnen lo kanya. Now Rav Papa says, look, I will make the following distinction. I think sometimes, even though it seems like a non-binding offer, sometimes it will be kona, sometimes it will not be kona. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Ashkeche de kashasi shechra. So now, basically, we are all going to turn into body language doctors. Where basically, we are going to... It's a funny Gemara coming up. We are going to look at the borrower at the term, at the due date of the loan, and we're basically going to read his body language. And based on the reading of the body language, we're going to see if he, A, is going to offer his property as payment for the loan, even though the property value exceeds the loan, or B, is just trying to push off the lender and really has no interest whatsoever in giving up that property. And so the Gemara goes like this. So let's say the lender finds a borrower at the time the loan is due. And where is he right now? He's in the bar and he's drinking. It's outrageously funny. I cannot believe the Gemara said it, and the Gemara just said it. So the borrower right now is in the bar and he's drinking. So the Gemara says at that point in time, the borrower is not doing anything in terms of trying to recoup the loan that he owes. And basically, you know what? It's my property, you take it. Because I'm not doing anything right now in terms of efforting myself to pay back the loan. However, but if at the time the loan is due and the lender finds a borrower and the borrower is knocking on doors, calling people, you know, can I borrow money? Can you give me a loan? You know, I got to pay off my debtor. So then, lokani. So then at that point in time, we can easily make the argument that the property that is exceeding the value of the loan is not in fact going to go over to the lender. Okay. So Basically, right now, what Rav Papa is trying to do is make a distinction in terms of whether or not the borrower at the due date of the loan is endeavoring to try to pay back the loan. So Rav Acha mitiftel Ravina Dilma. So Rav Acha says to Ravina, I don't understand. The body language doctor does not always do a good diagnosis. And you find the guy drinking at the bar. Do you know why he's drinking at the bar? Dilma lepakuche pachte kashase. Right now, because he's got a lot of anxiety, it's totally understandable. He owes a lot of money. And it's not because he's really ready to part with his property. It's because right now, the drinking, and this is, I'm not advocating, but the drinking does assuage the person. Rashi writes, again, this is not condoning. Rashi writes, "Lahafik dagaso," it takes away some of the concern. Rashi quotes the pasuk of Tehillim. Okay, so his drinking is not a function of him of him having given up on the property. It's just right now to help his anxiety a little bit. So inami, or it could very well be that he's in the bar and he's drinking, and as far as the money's concerned, somebody else came to him previously and pledged to give him the money in order to pay back the loan, but. In other words, we can't diagnose his body language and his behavior of drinking in a bar as him willing to part with his property. So Allah Amar Ravina, he copied b'demei v'adekani. So Ravina is now going to give a different type of body language diagnosis. And that is the following. Let's say he is very particular about the price of the property. So right now he feels that the price of the property, he does not want to be shortchanged. And right now I'm going over and I'm saying, you know what I think your property is worth? I think it's, I don't know, I'll throw out numbers. I think it's $100,000. And he looks at you and he says, $100,000? Are you crazy? No, it's not worth $100,000. It's $150,000. So, if he's machmir on the value of his properties, so that means that what he's doing now is he's not ready to part with any of his other properties, and so therefore that means that the one property that is exceeding the value of the loan, he's ready to part with. So, Amale Ravach Midiftul Ravina Dama Savar Ki Hechid Lo Tidzel Are. So the Gemara says again, you're reading too much in his language and in his, you know, and you can't just simply look at one particularity of the person and then assume that he's ready to part with his property. It could very well be that if people see him in a state of owing money and he's in a depressed, I don't mean that like psychologically, I mean financially, if he's in a depressed situation, so people might come over to him and take advantage of him and try to buy property off of him at a far less price than the actual value. So maybe right now he is not ready to part with his property, just simply showing the world that he's not in a depressed state and nobody should take advantage of him. So Alam Rav Papa Ikabit Bara Vadekani. So Rav Papa says that if he is refusing to sell his other properties, so that means then that he's ready to part with this one singular property. V'amra papa afagav d'amra rabana smachta lokanya apoti gehavi lemigbei mina. So finally, Rav Papa basically says that under most circumstances, when a person puts up a property against a loan and the property is far exceeding the value of the loan, he's not ready to part with it. Rav Papa did cite one scenario in which he's ready to give up he's going to give up the property, and that's when he is refusing to sell any of his other properties. And I'm not sure if I clarified this point very well, but once he's refusing to sell any of his other properties, that's an indication that he's not interested in raising the money to pay back the loan, and so therefore he's going to give up this one singular property. So Rav Papa says, so in general, I will say that a person is not ready to give up a property that exceeds the value of the loan. However, Rav Papa says, I will tell you this. If the person owes money, and he does have a property, so even though the lender obviously cannot collect the entire property as if it exceeds the value of the loan, but he certainly has a right to collect part of the property. Now the Gemara describes this as an apotiki. Generally speaking, an apotiki is where the borrower specifies which property it is that's going to be the security for the loan. nowadays when we borrow money against our from the bank against our houses. So that's, it's like an apotiki, meaning we are obviously designating and specifying which property exactly is going to be used as security against the loan. So the Gemara says, so Rav Papa says, we'll say the same thing over here. Amalei Rav Huna Breida Rav Nosson Rav Papa Mika Amalei Kani Lugubaina. So was that stipulated? So Amalei Marzusha Breida Rav Mar Laravina V'Amar Kani LeMigbe Minei Kani. So the Gemara says that if he said Kani LeMigbe Minei, meaning I acquire it to you so that you can collect from it, so that creates a kinyan. So sof asmachtehi, asmacht lo kanya. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, when all is said and done, this is after the loan has been issued. This is a property that exceeds the value of the loan. So the Gemara says it still falls under the category of an asmachta. So ela apotiki de kamara papa mai. So the Gemara says, okay, so then, when Rav Papa speaks about an apotiki that allows a lender to collect a particular property, so the Gemara says, what was Rav Papa describing? So when the borrower says to the lender, look, I have many properties, and obviously, when I borrowed the money from you, and it wasn't specified at the time, so obviously you have the right to collect from any one of the properties. However, if the borrower says to the lender after the origination of the loan, you can only collect from this particular property, so then that now falls under the category of a apotiki, which allows now the creditor to come and to collect from this property. Okay. How governed does Avalei Ara Lechavrei Bachrayus? So the Gemara now is going to continue on its discussion of Asmachta. So again, the basic idea is that when there is an offer that was made that was either exaggerated, inflated, hyperinflated, the exact definition of Asmachta is a little bit unclear. I'm doing right now in the high school, I'm doing the... the third paragraph of Sanhedrin. So there, a big discussion amongst Rishonim, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri, exactly giving the parameters and definitions of Asmachta. But the basic idea, I'm just simplifying it right now, is that when you make an offer that is hyperbole, that's exaggerated, so it is a non-binding commitment, like what we've been describing up until now, where basically the borrower is saying to the lender, oh, you know what? Let's take this property, even though its value exceeds that of the loan, and let's use that as security for the loan. So, is that binding? Is that not binding? So much discussion, but again, to put it succinctly, that falls under the category of asmachta. It's not binding. The Gemara now is going to give other examples of asmachta. How gavra d'zavin le'ara l'chavre? There was a person who sold land to his friend b'achrayus, and he sold it with a guarantee that if my creditors come and take that property away from you, I will reimburse you for that property. So, and not only that, but you can collect from not my Idis, which is the best property, but my double A rated Idis property. Okay, so I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know where this expression comes up. Idis. Generally speaking, we talk about three levels of property. Zibor's Benin is an Idis. So, okay, if, you know, I could do a search, but anyway, you can collect from my double A property in the event that I foreclose on the loan. I'm sorry, I default on the loan. Dislach. So I'm relaying me dislach. I'm relaying me idis. So I just lost my place. Etarfulay manai mig bisle me idis. Dislach. Okay. So I'm relaying me idis law mig manalach. De be inon la makem kamai. Ella magbinalach me idis acherim. The Islam. And I'm sorry, just one second.
The best of the best.
Yeah.
The next level. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. So the promise was to pay for the best of the best. So he said back to him, so I'm not going to collect the best of the best. To be in la makem kamai. Ela magbin lach midas acherim diisli. So he says, but you know what? I'll collect just the regular idis from you. Now, by the way, mind you, just to remind each other what we learned back in Gittin, and that is generally speaking, when it comes to a lender who is foreclosing on the property of the borrower. So what does he collect? Remember what we learned back then? So we learned back then, Beinonis. You collect the mid-grade field. Not the best, not the worst, but the mid-level field. So, and then there was a big discussion back there. I mean, in the Torah, you're really only entitled to collect the Zibaris, but the Chachamim want to incentivize the lender, so they allowed him to collect the Beinonis. Over here, we're talking about a collection of the Edis. But again, if they want to stipulate as such, they may do so. Now, the story goes on, Lesof Tafumine. So at this point in time now, he's looking to seize property because the borrower defaulted on the loan. Asa bidka shakuli ididis. And so, along comes the flood, a flash flood, and ruins the double A idis property. And now, Sever Rapapa lamemem idis. And now Rapapa says, okay, so the stipulation was such that he was ready to offer the best of the best, but it got flooded. So now, Rav Papa said, okay, in lieu of not being able to pay the best of the best, so I'll at least pay the best. So Amalei Ba'akaima. So the response was, yeah, but he has been on his property. Meaning, it's true that he offered the best of the best, but now that it's not there, so now we go back to the default setting. What's the default setting? Is that you only collect from the Beinonis.
Since it's all relative, you know, you could argue that, you know, he said the best of the best.
Agreed.
So not, this is the best of
the agreed.
Best.
Agreed.
The one that's white.
Agreed. So you see, the Amoraim are basically debating this very issue. So Amalei Ravachim Edifta Ravina Valema Leike Amor Lach Ana Magbina Lach Tahave Idiidis Kaima. So the Gemara says that you can make the argument that, look, in lieu of the fact that you don't have the best of the best, but certainly the next best is going to be a fair substitute for that. So the Amoraim argue in terms of what would be considered a fair replacement, considering the fact now that the borrower no longer has the Edis, he doesn't have the double A property. Another story. Rav Bar Shiva Hava Masik Bei Rav Kahana Zuzay. So Rav, son of Shiva, I don't think it's classic Rav, but either way, so he owed Rav Kahana money. Okay. Cannot be a good thing owing Rav Kahana money. Kahana was somewhat of a tougher personality. So Amrle lo, ilo perin alach liyamploni gabi mehay chamra. So now, again, nothing was agreed to from the origination of the loan in terms of what would serve as substitute for payment. But somewhere during the duration of the loan, so the borrower says to the lender, in this case Rav says to Rav Kahana, look, I know I'm going to owe you the money and I'm pretty sure that I'm going to end up defaulting on the loan. But can we do the following? I have wine. Can we use the wine that I have as substitution and satisfaction of the loan? Now, in terms of what the price of the wine is, so there is a market value to the wine. They assess the wine based on the current market value. And as Rashi points out over here, the wine went up in value. Okay, now, does the borrower now have to part with his wine? And consider now that the borrower, of course, does not want to part with his wine because it is now at an inflated rate. So, Savra Papala Memer Kiamisana Smachtalo Kane Hanimile Ba'ara, the lovely is Munikaime. Look, I can understand how property falls under the category of a non-binding agreement. Nobody likes selling the property. Everybody wants to hold on to the property. When I make offers to my lenders, oh, take that, take that, take that, even though you say it, you don't mean it, it's not binding, nobody wants to part with the properties. But here we're talking about merchandise, we're talking about commodity. It's wine. So Rav Papa thinks now we're going to make an argument that maybe when it comes to wine, so we're going to be, lenient. There's no lenient over here. But we're going to assume that it's not an asmachta, it is a binding agreement. We're basically going to treat wine like money. So Amalei Rav Huna Bar Rav Yishul Rav Papa Hachem Min Mishmei Derava called the E Lokani. So we're going to basically it's a very good way to view asmachta. Anytime you're using the word E in a sentence, E meaning if, if then, the if then clause that is constructed, and remember, this is after the origination of the loan. This was not worked out and contracted at the time of the loan. So anytime you have an if then, you know, if I default, then it's that all falls under the category of asmachta. It is a non-binding agreement. Okay. I'm Rav Nachman. Hashadam Rabbanan Aspach to Lokanya. Had Harav Adar Pere. So, Rav Nachman, true to form, as we learned in the beginning of this year today, at the very bottom of the previous Amud, Rav Nachman says that now that we are of the position that Asmach is not Kanya, and that it's a non-binding agreement, when the borrower makes an offer of a property to the lender after the origination of the loan, it's not contracted as a loan, and he just makes this offering, so it's not binding. Not only does the property get returned back to the borrower, but also the fruit does as well. Now, here's what comes out from that. Look, the borrower said to the lender, "Here, you know what? Take my property." Okay, and this was after the loan, and the property far exceeds the value of the loan. So the property is going to get returned to the borrower because, as we've discussed over the course of this daf, it is a non-binding agreement. It's an asmachta. Fine. The fruit in that property. Now, at the time, the borrower was basically saying to the lender, just take it. You know what? As far as the fruit is concerned, I'm mochel on the fruit. Just take it. So Rav Nachman says that also needs to be returned back to the borrower as well. Now, there was the mechila that was done. The borrower basically waived his right to the fruit, but it was betos, meaning he did so in a form that was not binding, and therefore it's going to go back to him. The Gemara points out there seems to be an inconsistency in Rav Nachman. Veha itmar. The Gemara says, I'm sorry, let me just quote the question. But the Gemara notes the following. We have a Gemara that we learned back in Yevamos, and it goes like this. Let's say I sell you a tree, but I'm not really selling you the tree, I'm selling you the fruit that's going to grow on the tree. The fruit is not here yet. We all know. This falls under the category of a davar shalom ba'la olam. You're trying to do a transaction on something that has not yet come into fruition. And here I say the word both literally and figuratively. It has not come into fruition. So, what's our position? So, the most tanaimer of the opinion, it's not eino kone. That's not created transaction. Now, Rav Meir happens to be of the opinion that it is kone. Okay. Let's say we do it. Now, even though it's not a transaction, but I contract with you to buy the fruit that is going to grow from your tree. Rav Huna Amar Achal Abala Olam Yachol Achzabo. Mishabala Olam and Yachol Achzabo. Now, Rav Huna says, look, up to the point where the fruit grows, the seller can always retract. And it makes perfect sense. The sale is not yet a valid sale. So you have every right to retract because you haven't gone into the transaction as of yet. After the fruit, however, grows, so at that point in time now, it becomes binding. Rav Nachman Amar Af Mishabao La'olam Yachol Lach Zabo. And Rav Nachman says, no. Since the contracted agreement between the buyer and the seller was done before the fruit grew, so therefore, the seller's ability to retract from that sale is going to stand before and even after the fruit has grown. Now, Rav Nachman says, now, although I'm in full favor of either side retracting from this agreement, even after the fruit has grown, but I will say this, says Rav Nachman. If, let's say, the seller says to the buyer, you want to try some of the fruit? Go ahead. So it's a mechila betos. In other words, he waived it mistakenly, thinking that it was a binding transaction, even though it wasn't a binding transaction. And Rav Nachman's ruling is that the seller does not have to reimburse the buyer on the fruit. So what do you see over here? That this is a mechila that's done betos. When I waive something, even though it was mistaken at the time, nevertheless, according to Rav Nachman, we will view it as a mechila, and the mechila stands. So right now, we seem to be at a little bit of a loggerhead, because Rav Nachman is saying two statements, and they are obviously at odds with one another. In the case of the lender-borrower, where the borrower now is offering up a property that far exceeds the value of the loan, and he's offering it up after the origination of the loan. This falls under the category of asmachta. The property is not going to go over to the lender. And the lender has to make full restitution on the property and on the fruit as well. Even though the argument you can make is that the borrower waived his right to the fruit, but it was a mechila b'taos, and therefore it's going to go back. Masha ein kein, in this case of a sale, where there was a sale that was done on the fruit of a tree that has not yet come into fruition. So Rav Nachman says that if the seller waives his rights to the fruit to the buyer, so the buyer does not have to reimburse the seller. It's a mechila. And even though it was a mechila b'taos, we still view it as a mechila. So there's so obviously we're at odds with the Rav Nachman. Says the Gemara, Hasam Zvini Hacha Halva. And the Gemara says, but we're going to make the following distinction. When, in the case of the tree, it's a case of a sale. And in the case of a sale, if there was a mechila, if there was a waiving that was done, even if it was done mistakenly, it's still going to be acknowledged as a mechila, even though it was done b'taos. However, in the case of a loan, no. Why? Because Rashi, the bottom Rashi, mechzei keribis, shemitchila ba'ava alo, ucheribis ketzutz adami. It looks very much like ribis min haTorah. Now, this Rashi is interesting. I know what Rashi's trying to do here. What Rashi's trying to do is position ourselves so that this is ribis min haTorah. Because remember what we learned a couple of days ago. What gets reimbursed back to the lender? To the borrower. Only ribis that's Torah violation ribis. If it's ribis derabanan, that doesn't go back to the borrower. So what Rashi's trying to do is set us up so this is as close to ribis min haTorah as you can possibly get. Over here, when a property is given and the fruit of the property is given as well, so it is as close to ribis min haTorah as you can get. And that's what Rashi's saying. Vein avergir ribis b'dvar halva al b'dvar mecher kagon amar b'peres demas nisim. This doesn't fall under the category of avak ribis. Had it fell under the category of avak ribis, so then the fruit would not have gotten reimbursed. Amar Rava. We turn now to the top of Samach Zayin Amar Aleph. Have you seen it come to Rav Nachman? Now remember, Rav Nachman was of the opinion that in the case of the buyer-seller, if you waive the rights, so even if it was done by mistake, it's considered a mechila. So, I was with Rav Nachman, says Rava. I was going to ask him a question by Ona'a, which really would seem to question the validity of his opinion. He knew what I was up to. Sorry. Va'odik. He knew what I was up to, and Chazisa Nylonis. And he came back at me with the case of the Islandist to show that I was wrong. Okay, so we know the outline. The outline is that Rav is going to challenge Rav Nachman based on Ona, and Rav Nachman is going to respond with the case of Islandist. Now that we know the outline, let's fill in all the details. Rava says to Rav Nachman, remember a parak ago in the fourth parak we talked about the Isser of Ona. If I charge somebody a 1/6 surcharge, or not surcharge, but 1/6 over its value, so what do we say? The sale stands, but I have to give back the difference. And even though it was mechila b'taos, meaning I know I overpaid, and I know it was a mistake, but okay, you keep it. No, we don't say that. We don't say you keep it. It goes back to the person who overpaid. So doesn't that show you, Rav Nachman, that even if it was a mechila that was done b'taos, it goes back to the person who made the mistake. Not like what you're saying in the case of the fruit and the tree. Va'odik, chazis and islandis. Now, Rav Nachman said in response, I'm going to challenge you with islandis. And that's the following. The case of islandis is when he makes a mechila, when I should say rather, she makes a mechila, and she does so mistakenly. and yet it's going to stand. Now, did not we learn the following Mishnah? Mishnah and Ksuvas teaches us Hamimaenis Vashnia Vailonis In Lahem Luksuva Veloperis Velomazonis Veloblos. The Mishnah, I'm going to give you a very short version of the explanation of this Mishnah. And that is, and I'll tell you what, just for the purpose of brevity, I'm just going to explain right now the islandness. The Ma'amanis and the Shnia are important, but again, just to focus on our discussion right here. An islandness is a woman who is incapable of having a child. She's called an islandness because she has masculine features about her. The word islandness comes from isle. It means a ram. Means a male animal. So she has masculine features about her. We know from the Midrashim tells us that Sarah was an islandess. And which is why she was incapable of having a child, and Kadosh Baruch Hu rectified the situation. Okay. Without any more details, which right now are not important, so she marries a man, and she didn't disclose to the man that she was an islandess, and it seems to be that there was a clear knowledge on her part that she was an islandess. So, at that point in time, it is a total mekach taos. The marriage is voided. And ain lo, ksuva velo peres velo mezonos velo belos. And at that point in time, he has no financial obligation to her. The ksuva payment, he doesn't have to pay her. Now, for the sake of brevity, I'll just simply say, the 200 zuz that he has to pay at the conclusion of a marriage, he doesn't have to pay over here. Because there was no marriage. Peros, when she comes in with property, nichzei maluk property, so he eats the peros over the duration of that property. Here, the marriage was never a marriage. So that was not fruit that he was entitled to. He doesn't have to reimburse her for any fruit that he ate off her nichzei maluk property. Mizonos, belos, support, food support, worn out clothing. Again, I'm not going to discuss them right now. As right now, I just want to focus on the main point over here, germane to our discussion. And that is that she goes into a marriage. She knows that she's an islandess, and she presumably was mochel. In other words, the fruit on my fields and any financial obligation that he has to me, I'm mochel. I waive it all. And presumably, she didn't know that it was a non-marriage. And yet, it's a mechila b'taos, and yet, she doesn't get a reimbursement. So this seems to support Rav Nachman. Now, the Gemara says, every part of this discussion that we just had, the Gemara says, I can basically blow it apart. V'lohi. Lo ona havitzuyifta lo islandess misayelei. The ona never served as a question against Rav Nachman, and the islandess never served as a defense of Rav Nachman. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Lo ona tiyifta de lo yada di isay ona de machil gabe. Look, ona'a, we've made this point already a number of times in the fourth parak, and we'll say it again right now. When a person was taken advantage of, he didn't know he was taken advantage of. You can't be mochel on something that you didn't even know existed. You didn't know that you were overcharged. So, you can't challenge Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, when I waive something, knowing what I'm waiving, even though there were certain mistakes that I made in terms of assumption, but I'm waiving it, so then you could say, mechila b'taos, have a mechila. But in the case of Ona, he didn't even know. So the Gemara says, so that doesn't stand as a question against Rav Nachman. V'lo einlin is misayelei denichalei detepikol hashma, de'ishus, de'ishus. And the Gemara says, and furthermore, let's go to the case of the islandess. You see over there, she waived it, but it wasn't a mistake. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knew she was an islandess. She wanted to be a married woman. So she goes into the situation knowing she's an islandess, knowing that there are going to be some of her assets that are going to go to him, notably the peros. And it's not a mechila b'taos. It's not a mistake. She wants it to go to him. What is she getting as in exchange? She's getting a title of being a married woman. That's what she wanted. And so therefore, it's not a mechila b'taos. For that, however temporary period of time, that she gets to be Mrs. So-and-so, so she's ready to waive that. It's not an example of mechila b'taos. So we don't have a challenge against Rav Nachman. We also don't have a proof to Rav Nachman as well. Okay, stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with a story of a woman.